Welcome to Shift, a college admissions ACT and SAT podcast for a changing world. I'm Tyler, the founder of Achievable, and we have an affordable ACT course that includes everything you need to ace your exam. A full textbook, tons of ACT questions backed by our memory-enhancing algorithm, videos on key topics, a built-in study planner, and full-length practice exams. You can get a free trial by going to achievable.me, and if you like it, the code podcast will get you 10% off at checkout. Now, let's get started. Today, we have Stephen Friedfield from Accept You back with us. And Stephen, really excited to have you back. If you could just tell us a little bit about yourself and your company for people who haven't heard you before, that would be great.
Sure. Thanks so much, Tyler, for having me back. I appreciate it. I worked in undergraduate admissions at Cornell University for 4 years. I was an assistant dean in the College of Arts and Sciences. And then I moved down to Princeton University for 6 years. There I was an associate dean of graduate admissions in the School of Engineering and Applied Science. I then worked independently in as an admissions consultant for 4 years before co-founding Accept You in 2010. We are comprised entirely of former undergraduate and graduate admissions officers, and they work virtually with students. To date, we've worked with nearly 7,000 students, helping high school students apply to college and helping college students apply to graduate school. Really happy to be here.
Yeah, fantastic. And so today we're going to be talking about sort of one of the questions that is coming up a lot lately for undergrad students, which is, should I submit my standardized test scores? I think that for undergrad admissions, at least from my purview, it feels like the trend of test optional is kind of ebbing a little bit, right? Like, I think it's kind of going back in the other direction in some places. Yeah. And also, you know, I think that there's still a lot of tests, like a lot of schools that give students the option to submit their scores or not. So when you're working with a student, I want to ask, like, sort of where do you start this decision-making criteria? Kind of what are the parameters for it?
Yeah, actually, I've even 3.5 years ago when university started en masse going test optional because of COVID, I've actually always called it submission optional. So we still sort of expect our students to take the test. So I feel like then they have the option to submit it or not. But I really want students to be prepared. So when they're, you know, 10th graders and 11th graders, some students opt not ever to take it, but that's fairly rare. We want students to at least have some set of scores to try and figure out then should I submit them or not. To answer your question about parameters, we're really looking at what kinds of programs the student is interested in, meaning academic programs. We're also wondering what are the middle 50th percentiles of the university's SATs and ACTs. And I could dive into that for a minute if that's okay.
Sure. Yeah, I think it's a good start.
Yeah. So every university, if you go to a university guidebook that you can buy online, or even just going to any rankings or the universities themselves, they might give you some public information about what is their middle 50th percentile. And just to make it easier, I'll just stick with the SAT instead of or whichever you'd prefer.
Whatever is easier for you, it doesn't really matter.
So if the SAT, you know, the scoring goes from 400 to 1600, if the university publicly posts that its middle 50th percentile on the SAT is, let's say, 1300 to 1500, that gives us a lot of information. Us meaning the students or the high school counselors or parents or us and Accept You, the admissions consultants. So basically 1300 to 1500, what that means is that of the university students currently on campus, 50% of them who submitted an SAT score got between a 1300 and a 1500. Good information to have. But yeah. It also means that 25% of the students on campus who submitted an SAT score got a 1510 or higher. Well, that also means that 25% of the students on campus who submitted an SAT score got a 1290 or lower. And we just
Right.
don't know how low they go. Are they all huddled at 12 or around 1280, 1290, or do they range from 1000 to 1290 and so forth? So there's a lot of unknowns. And so if a student has in that 1300 to 1500 range on her SAT, should she submit her score? These are the kinds of questions that we have with our students all the time, especially in the summer and the fall. And the reality is, it's not exactly a yes or no answer. If you have a 1510 or higher, it's a yes, because we know you're in the top 25%. If you're in that 1300 to 1500, I'd probably look and see how do you compare to that middle point, which is 1400. Are you at 1400 or higher? If the answer is yes, then I'm almost certain, and my colleagues and I are almost certain to say, yeah, you should submit your SAT score. If you're between 1300 and 1390, it's possible, but we'd want to dig more deeply. For example, if you got a 1370, and you and 800 of those points are math and 570 are evidence-based reading and writing. Well, and you want it to be, let's say, a math or science or engineering major, it might be a yes. We might recommend it. That's why I want to say it depends on what you want to study. It depends on the university's percentages, and but that's a starting point. That's just a starting point.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the it is important, and I don't know if the data is always available, but US News often has a
Yeah.
lot,
Yeah,
where you can
they
get the
do.
splits, right, between like math and the other sections, and I think that could
It's very
potentially
helpful.
inform you,
Yeah.
yeah, and sort of just like which one's stronger and which one you should lean towards.
Yeah. But I didn't even recommend, if you're in the bottom quartile, the bottom 25%, I would not recommend. I mean, someone does submit those scores, but I usually say, well, they might be students who have another quote hook. Maybe they were, a third generation legacy at that university, or maybe it was a recruited athlete, or maybe it was someone from a geographically distant area that's underrepresented, or maybe it was someone who has a brilliant music talent and submitted a music audition, and we can go on and on. So there are, if it's a portfolio-based admissions like art and architecture, that counts so much for that student's admissibility that maybe the university was very forgiving for their SAT scores. So you never know why someone got that 1290 or lower, and you never know how far below 12, 1300 or 1290 they actually were. So it's just a bit of a risk. And so we feel more confident recommending students to submit their scores if they hit that middle point of the middle 50th percentile. It's not exactly black and white. We always It's part art and part science.
Yeah, I mean, they're always going to admit you based on your whole application and not just your test scores, right? But
Of
like
course.
for me, I
Yeah.
think that the test scores are kind of like a lighthouse in a sea of bad data. Because there are a lot of, like I think it's like 47% of US high school students have a 4.0 GPA now. Right,
Wow.
it feels like everybody has two or three AP classes now, and when I was
Yeah.
applying to college, I didn't take any AP classes, right? And
Right.
it's just like, and there, a million extracurriculars and other things. It feels like everything got so much more competitive, especially because the Common App makes it so you can
Yeah.
pretty easily spread your application around.
Yeah.
So for me, with all of that, I mean, I like that the standardized tests exist. But I also think that it changes when you would take them. So, for instance, and this
Yeah.
is, I just wanted to ask you about this and kind of what you think. I very much feel like if you're coming, let's say you're like one of the top 5% of students from a not so great school,
Yeah.
right? Like, I feel like then standardized test scores might be a good thing to include. Because you're showing your aptitude outside of like this school that maybe doesn't have the greatest resume.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that? And do you have other sort of other edge cases like that that you can
Yes.
think of?
100% I agree with you. And I do have another case for you to consider. But yeah, if a student is attending, we'll call it a weak high school or a less, you know, less well-known high school that's not very competitive or very rigorous. Let's say it's a very low graduation rate, even, or a very low percentage of students who go on to a four-year institution. I agree with you that you really do need to be in the top 5% or so, to use your number. You hit the nail on the head. You really need to be highly ranked in that school. But then, yeah, the admissions officers might question, okay, I'm glad that you were super highly ranked within this context, but how are you going to compete with students coming from much more well-resourced schools and backgrounds and regions of the world? And so that's where the standardized testing could help the student prove herself or himself, really, and just say, yeah, I didn't have a most rigorous course load because it's what my school offered, but I aced what was put in front of me with regard to my courses, and I am proving that I understand the math and the reading and the writing required of a successful student at this university. So you're not wrong that the standardized testing could really come into play for those types of students. Another sort of alternative idea is those schools, high schools, sometimes they don't give grades. There was one school I used to read the admissions applications from, a school called, I don't remember the exact name, but it had the word alternative in the title. So it was some sort of alternative school, which basically was code for, we are not going to grade our students. We don't think grades define, you know, A, B, C, D, F should define our students. And instead, every single transcript that I received was a description, and it was how did Harry do in his history class, or how did Jane do in her physics class? And I literally was not did not have the time, nor the patience, nor the wherewithal to read how a student did in all six of her classes for all 3.5 years of high school. So what did I do? I then relied on the standardized testing, which was the greatest of ironies, because because no one in admissions is ever going to read a paragraph. Instead, an A is easy to view and read, and you can see it in a nanosecond, but it would take, you know, a minute or two or three to read every paragraph for every grade taken. So that to me was, I always thought, very funny and ironic that they wanted such a non-reliance on grades that there became this ultra reliance on standardized testing.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that is ironic because I'm sure they're trying to get away from standardized measurements at
Oh,
all,
without a doubt,
but
yeah.
it turns
And
out that
this
they're
was back in the
useful.
day when, yeah, this was back in the day when the standardized testing was required. So they couldn't not take the standardized exams. These days they probably don't take them, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's such a funny story. So I am curious now, sort of, we talked about, general things. We talked about some edge cases. I'm curious if there's anything else on sort of should I submit my test scores or not that you want to cover? Like maybe we talk about
Sure.
student athletes or other
Yeah.
things like that. And like let's start with student athletes.
Yeah, I mean, I have colleagues who know better than I about the NCAA rules or Ivy League, you know, AI, I think it's called AI rules, academic index rules, and so forth. So I think that the recruited athletes, probably, I shouldn't say probably, they should be taking, I think everyone should be taking practice SATs or ACTs in 10th grade, and then the real SAT or ACT in 11th grade, because you never know if the universities on your list are going to require these scores or not. And that's why I said I want to call them submission optional, not test optional, because, and there are some universities, I'm quite certain the public universities in Florida, and I believe the public universities in Georgia, do require the standardized exams. And MIT went back to requiring standardized exams. There aren't that many universities that stopped requiring standardized exams for COVID and have now returned to requiring the exams. But you never know. When we talk to students at our company who are ninth or 10th graders, well, we want to prepare them and say, look, 2 or 3 years from now, they might actually change their decision to go test optional. So you want to be prepared. I don't know that I can think of other sort of categories of students that maybe should be taking them, like a recruited athlete. That's a good point that you make. It could be international students who maybe the universities are not that familiar with the high school curriculum or the high school itself or the quality of the school. And so it's similar to your example earlier for a US high school that's not very strong, let's say. I think that the standardized exams could help the student or help the university know a bit more about that student's preparedness.
Yeah. Well, and I think, I mean, it's important to remember why standardized tests exist. They exist to make sure that you can handle the academic rigor of the school, right? They're not just there for an agenda. And so, yeah, I think like certainly what I've heard with a lot of athletes is that they just want to know that you're not going to flunk out. If it like if it's like a D1 school, obviously, if you're doing like D2 or lower schools, they mostly expect you to be a normal academic student, but also play sports. But like D1, they maybe are a little more wiggle room as
They're
long as you
more flexible with your academic preparedness, but they want to make sure that, I mean, it's not in the interest of the student, certainly, or of the coach or the sport if the student doesn't do well or succeed academically. I mean, and I don't mean just barely graduating with a 2.1. That's not a good experience for the student, I'm certain. So they just want to make sure that the student is well enough prepared to handle the rigors of the university. There now we didn't talk about the University of California system.
Oh,
They went
yeah.
they went test blind, I don't know, X years ago. I'm not sure what X is, a few years ago. And that's actually been challenging for some of our students at XFU. Our students who are fantastic standardized test takers, it's actually been a bummer for them because they wanted to show off their 35 ACT. We had a student with that, or we have a student with a 34 ACT. We've seen students with a 1590 SAT last year, and they were good in other areas, or and sometimes great in other areas, but this would have, I think, been a feather in their cap to try and convince the university, yeah, I really mastered these materials, and I personally have said for years that a really strong student might do well or might not do well on, let's say, a standardized exam. You never know. But a student who's not strong academically will not do well on a standardized exam. So if a student does very well, like a 1590, I think it says something about his academic, strengths.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, it definitely does, right? And it shows like a level of aptitude. And I don't know, what do you feel like the consequences are of the UC system being like no tests allowed at all? 'Cause I feel like what it's going to do eventually is those kids are not going to apply. And then you're basically discouraging some of your top performers from applying.
Oh, we haven't seen any drop off in interest in the UCs. It's
Oh,
just
good.
been cha yeah, not at all. It's just been challenging for them because there are some students that I've seen who have gotten waitlisted where I'm very certain that they would have gotten in if the scores had been taken into consideration. And I predict that there will be some students who maybe get rejected, but they probably would have been admitted or waitlisted again if their scores had been received. So I don't disagree that the standardized testing maybe shouldn't be overly used, but I don't think it's a bad thing to consider standardized exams. I mean, that's look at MIT. They went back to requiring them. Clearly, MIT must have felt that the students whom they admitted without standardized exams perhaps did not perform well, were not really able to to handle the freshman year. We've always heard, I'm not a standardized testing expert, but I've always read or always heard that, it's, quote, a predictor of your first year performance. And who knows if that's true. There's been a lot of statisticians and economists and sociologists and other education professors who have studied this very topic. That's why with transfer admissions, rarely are transfer applicants required to submit standardized exams. I mean, I have heard of it, but it's pretty rare,
Yeah,
especially if a
it's
student's
rare.
if a student's yeah, if a student's been at a university for 1.5 years, i.e. 2 years, and wants to be at another university for years 3 and 4, the standardized exams were not ever part of the equation. I think that if a student is only at a university for one semester and wants to train, it's actually really hard to get into a second university after just what your first semester. So you usually need to be at a place for a full year. There's a lot less reliance on standardized exams for those students. But for high schoolers, we want them to start. I always recommend taking a practice SAT or the PSAT in 10th grade, and taking a pre-ACT or a practice ACT in 10th grade. I just think it's good for a sophomore to have a baseline, of scores. What are my strengths? What are my weaknesses? Which exam is a better fit for me? If one really surfaces versus the other, then that's the one that you should study hard for your junior year. Take the one that you're better at one, two, or at most three times in 11th grade.
Yeah, and also I feel like the other side of that too is basically that by taking the test early, you're gonna be probably a little bit early on some of the concepts, right? Like,
Sure,
algebra
sure.
2, trigonometry, but it helps put it in context for why it's important to learn it, right? Like, I think that in
Totally.
school, you're just kind of like, if sometimes it feels like you're learning stuff to learn stuff and you don't actually really care. So when you're like, oh man, all right, well, I need to pay attention to this because I remember that this is on the ACT, that I think can kind of help.
I had not thought of it that way, but that makes a lot of sense to me. I just feel like, the students need to figure out, which is a better fit for them. They want to know how much time they'll even need to study for concepts they haven't quite grasped yet. But I like your approach as well, is, oh, it might reinforce when they're learning the material in their actual classes. Oh, this is something that I need to pay attention to. That makes a lot of sense to me. A lot of high school, oh, all high schools practically give the SAT, or rather the PSAT, to 10th graders. Sorry, a lot of high schools give the PSAT to 11th graders. Not all high schools give the PSAT to 10th graders. So I'm always pushing students to take it in 10th grade if their high school offers it to 10th grade. And then I say, if they don't offer it to 10th graders, can you petition or ask for special, a special exception to take it as a 10th grader? Because I really want that student to, get some exposure to the standardized exams as a younger student, because if the very first time you're taking standardized exams is the first half of 11th grade, you're gonna start to run out of testing dates and options. And then there's prom, there's final exams, there's AP exams, there's a lot in the, and there, you might be on a spring drama or a spring sport. We can go on and on. And so it's good to be prepared.
Yeah, exactly. Any other kind of like final thoughts about standardized test scores and undergraduate admissions?
I think that the students should always remember that it is a holistic reading process. The admissions process has actually always been holistic, especially at more selective or very highly selective universities. And you indicated this as well. It's just one piece of the puzzle, it's one part of the equation. But when a university says it's test optional, we really have seen students getting into top 25 type universities without standardized exams, as long as their other pieces of the puzzle are really excellent, really strong, really impactful. But if you can study for and take an SAT or ACT and really perform quite well, it's one more piece that you're providing of evidence of why they should admit you. So that's why we want students to study hard, take the exam at most three times, as I said, and then it actually could be helpful to them if they submit a really strong standardized exam score.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you so much. This has been Shift, a college admissions podcast for a changing world, hosted by Tyler from Achievable with Stephen Friedfeld from Accept You. You can get a free trial of Achievable's ACT course by going to achievable.me and use the code podcast to get 10% off at checkout.